Hey Pacers fans, this is Miles Turner, and you're listening to Pacers Sound.
Hello and welcome into another Sideline Guys podcast. I'm Pat Boylan, as always, with Jeremiah Johnson, and I try to start these things out with a stat or a nugget that stands out to me of the week or something that is pertinent. And one of my favorite stats of the season is where the Pacers stand right now. We are recording this on a Thursday afternoon. And the Pacers are 9-0. This is with some help from John Schumann from NBA.com. The Pacers are now 9-0 against the bottom 12 teams in the NBA. They're undefeated, and they're the only undefeated team in the NBA against those teams. So the Pacers taking care of business against that bottom third and a little more of the NBA. And I'm curious of your perspective, because I've kind of had this debate with a couple of coworkers. And to me, some of the more satisfying wins of the year have been recently taking care of Brooklyn, taking care of Atlanta. I know these are teams that are going to end up near the bottom of the standings, but last year that team struggled with road games, period, and lost a lot of those games where I would be leaving our studio downtown, Jeremiah, and I'd be like, man, there was a missed opportunity. And I felt like I left there so many times thinking that. And it's amazing to me now that we are in late December, and I don't think I've left our radio studio on a road game feeling like, besides the Knicks game, and that was only because they got up by so much, not the opponent, where I said, man, they really lost an opportunity here. And that's just so refreshing to me that even though I know beating the Hawks and beating the Nets are not your most accomplished wins, the way the Pacers took care of those games, and when you compare them to last year, to me, those have been two of the more satisfying wins of the season.
I would agree with you, Pat, and I would say that I've seen some improvement, because that Philadelphia, New York weekend where there were two games you thought the Pacers could have won on the road, you know, that's in the first half of the season. The only other game that would fall under that category, as you referenced, would maybe that game at Miami. And in that first weekend of the season, the Pacers beat the Nets, then lost at home to Portland in a game that was not close, and then lost at Miami. Whiteside wasn't playing, Miles wasn't playing. But after those first three games, I was kind of wondering a little bit about the team and saying, you know, they're 1-2. Two games that weren't great, and I was kind of wondering where this team was, and I looked at the schedule for week two, and I thought, it's going to be tough to win at Minnesota, and it's going to be tough to win at Oklahoma City, and I said, this is maybe the season that maybe people were anticipating nationally. It might be a tough season, and they quickly got that big road win at Minnesota, and I think that was one of those games that it's so far, you know, it's so much in the past right now that you don't think about it. But I think that was a very, very important game for this team early on to show against what is proving to be a pretty good team that they could go on the road and play well. That wasn't a game they won because the home team, you know, just played poorly. Now, Minnesota did play poorly in that game, but they played very well, and there have been a number of very impressive road wins. There were about two or three impressive road wins last season. At Oklahoma City comes to mind, and at Houston as well. But there were just not enough good performances, and there were a number of bad home road losses a season ago. And that's been the one thing that I think we started discussing in training camp, that I thought this team would never, you'd never question their effort. They might be out-talented at times, but they would bring it against teams with equal or lesser talent level, and that's been exactly what we've seen.
And I think that game in Atlanta on Wednesday night, I think is indicative of the way that this team is going to need to beat those kind of teams on the road. Atlanta, you know, Schroeder's a good player. They've got a lot of young talent looking to prove themselves. The Pacers out-talent the Hawks, but they're on the road in a building where historically they haven't played well in the last 10 years, even though I know not many players on this team even work into those stats. It was close in the first half, and then the Pacers began to wear them down in the third. All of a sudden, you look up in the fourth quarter, and the lead is 20 points. And I kind of had a funny thought to myself that I sort of caught myself thinking in a way that is a little bit errant, in that I looked at Oladipo, who I think had a big push late third, early fourth that kind of separated the lead there. And I looked down at his stats near the end of the game, and I go, 23 points. not a bad night for Victor Oladipo. And then I kind of caught myself and I said, wait a minute, 23 points. I mean, this is how well this guy has been playing, that he scored 23 points. And my initial reaction wasn't, all right, another great game from Oladipo. It was, you know, not bad. And that's so funny because 23 points a game, if you average it through the season, you're going to be one of the top scorers in the league. Yet that's how well he has been playing. And he was certainly solid. He was certainly efficient against Atlanta. And I think when Indiana really started to make their gap separation against the Hawks, it was not surprising that it was Victor Oladipo leading that charge.
Yeah, more on this game a little bit later, but that was the first thing that Chris Denari said to me before his segment on Pacers Live postgame was that felt like a quiet 23 points. And anytime your leading scorer can do so, but he doesn't have to force things. I think you look down and you see a Victor stat line that is 8 for 15 from the field, 3 for 5 from 3, 4 for 5 from the free throw line, just two turnovers. I think it's one of those kind of classic Victor Oladipo games and what you like to see from your go-to guy. And I think I won't listen anymore to any discussion about regression to the mean with Victor Oladipo. I think we've seen the mean, and I think we like where it is and what it really portrays for the future for Oladipo. And another stat, you referenced the taking care of business sort of stat from John Schumann, but this was one when I was digging around a little bit yesterday and even maybe the day before that, looking at these games before Christmas, the game against Atlanta and then Brooklyn as opportunities. And one of the reasons they are opportunities for this team is because the Pacers have been so good against average to below average teams defensively. And so now the Pacers are 13-1 this season against teams in the bottom half in terms of defense. And when I say defense, it's not necessarily points allowed, but defensive rating. Their only loss against a bottom 15 team in terms of defensive rating was against the New Orleans Pelicans. And that, of course, was a game that really maybe is the most disappointing loss, maybe outside of the Celtics all season, because of the big margin the Pacers had at halftime, and then they allowed the Pelicans to come back. But I think what that says is this team can be elite offensively against teams that are average to below average defensively. They're, you know, okay defensively, not good, but better than they have been. Currently, they're 18th in defensive rating. But they maybe need to work on things, and maybe some of the matchups you'll be interested to watch moving forward are against some of the really good defensive teams. So the Nets right now are currently 22nd in defensive rating. The Pacers already have two wins against them. Then coming up, you've got a Bulls team that is not a good defensive team. You've got a Mavericks team that is not good defensively as well. They're 16th, so they're, you know, in the middle. The Pistons is an interesting one because they're currently 14th. Timberwolves, they're not great either. So, you know, this is a really important stretch, I think, for the Pacers. So much was made about that six-game homestand, but they're going through a number of games right now against teams that I think match up well with them, that the Pacers have a chance to go on a little bit of a run.
And we will look forward a little bit later in this podcast. A question I have for you here. I thought your walk-off interview with Bojan was one of the best that you have had, probably top three, top five at most. I'm curious. I'd like a little bit of a play-by-play. And I know, because the thoughts that I go through before doing a similar walk-off, you know, one of these interviews, what you were probably thinking and the line of questions that had to go into this. Because on one hand, you said, being a little humble on text after, that you were kind of set up for this. But at the same point, I think you kind of had to navigate Bojan's Monday night, you know, not being too harsh on Monday night, but also understanding that, you know, look, we haven't heard him talk since Monday night, and it's important that we bring this up, and then transition that into what he did on Wednesday night, you know, putting a positive ending on that so he would give you a good bite. And ultimately, this is a player, Bojan, that he's not typically the most outspoken guy and is sometimes a little bit more difficult to get a really good interview from. And there was a lot going on, I guess, in that interview and what had to be your thought process beforehand and what ultimately yielded what I thought was a really good walk-off interview.
Pat, you are correct. As the clock was winding down, this was not one of those games where you're waiting until the final minute to decide who to request for the walk-off interview. And as the game was maybe at halftime, I was kind of thinking about Miles Turner because he also had a little bit of a game that he probably wanted to bounce back from against the Celtics. But it became pretty clear that Bojan was the person not only that deserved to talk on that game, but the fans deserved to hear from. And so I was kind of thinking the first question would just be a generic question about the game, and then I would segue, and perhaps he would bring it up on his own. And as I thought about the way to phrase a, you know, question about a game against the worst team in the NBA, that, you know, the Pacers should win that game, and there was nothing overly dramatic or specific that I really needed to ask about that game, because it was more about the bounce back from Monday. I just decided to start with that, and I could tell pretty quickly when he came over to me that he had a little bit of a sense of relief, and you saw a smile from him even before the interview started that we don't always see, because while he is I think a pretty good guy, and I think his teammates really like him, he's someone that is you don't always see his emotions, and so I could tell he was in one of those moods where he just felt good about being able to help his team win and was glad to have had a game and a performance to move on from Monday. And then, of course, you know, because we hadn't talked to him, and I honestly did go over in his direction after shoot around, because I know no one got to hear from him after the game on Monday, I thought we needed to hear from him maybe on Pacers Live pregame. And I don't know whether, I think he had to go to the trainer's room after shoot around to get something done, and for whatever reason he kind of gotten out of there pretty quickly. So I thought we needed to hear from Bojan. I decided to just start with that question because that was the biggest question, and sometimes that's maybe where you need to start and then you go from there. And I thought what he said was honest, it was emotional, and it was exactly what, you know, you don't always want a player to just say something that the fans want to hear. You want them to mean it, and it also be what the fans want to hear. And so I think as much as fans were upset about what happened, some fans probably didn't sleep for the last 2 days. The diehard fans were probably that disappointed. Bojan said he didn't sleep either. And then he talked about the impact that, you know, his teammates made on him. And he basically, without me leading him in that direction, he spoke big picture. He said that this made him feel like this is the place that he wants to be in. You know, it's been an interesting year for him, having been traded from Brooklyn, spending time with the Wizards, being a part of a playoff run, but then deciding to sign in free agency with the Pacers. He probably still is feeling his way a little bit and trying to get comfortable in his new surroundings. But he said, I think, two different times during that interview, you know, these are the people I want to be around. This is the place I want to be. And I think it spoke volumes about not just his teammates, but everyone within the organization. And I know there were people in the front office that had called Bojan and talked to him and told him to keep his head up. And I think that was very important to him, and he referenced that as well in the interview. So we don't always get long and thoughtful interviews from Bojan because every player is different. I mean, some people let their play do the talking. Some people maybe talk more than they play, and some do both. And Bojan's one of those guys that's a quiet guy, and he's not mean about in terms of not wanting to do interviews, but I just don't think it's his favorite thing to do. And English probably, you know, not his primary language, and sometimes that is also not great for an interview perspective, but I think it was the perfect interview, not from my perspective, but from what Bojan was able to say at the right time.
Yeah, I agree, and if fans haven't seen that on Fox Sports Indiana's Twitter page, you should really follow them anyway if you don't. They post a lot of the good interviews and clips and highlights and things throughout the game over on their Twitter page. We got a really good quote. Mark Boyle does the radio interviews on the road because I'm in studio, so naturally he's there, and he will do our walk-off interview, which was with Miles Turner, and he had a quote when Mark asked about gelling seemingly quicker, I think, than most had anticipated. He said, quote, "Our front office did a hell of a job getting high-character guys in here, and when you do that, it's easy to gel, and we're really only going to get better." That was Turner last night. And in a second, we're going to look forward, and I think there's a real opportunity for this team right now at 18-14 when you look at the schedule that is remaining in 2017 to really end this calendar year on a high mark, to really start to separate themselves in the next handful of games. I think we would be totally remiss if we didn't at least go back and hit on this Boston game, because while we, of course, are Pacers employees and always have to be cognizant of things like that, this was a stunning game, I think, from any perspective. And, I mean, this game had more storylines than sometimes weeks of basketball will. The Pacers got down 20 points. They stormed all the way back against the best defensive team in the league, which is something that, you know, they've shown such an ability to come back when they get these major deficits, especially at home. But I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I know this team is capable, but this is the Celtics, who are the best defensive team in the league. This isn't making a comeback against the Bulls or even the Pistons. This is the top defensive team in the league. They come storming all the way back, and everybody knows how the game ended. We didn't need to we don't need to rehash the play-by-play of it. But I think something that we still could and should hit on, and I think it's easier to move on, like you said, when Bojan has a game like he does on Wednesday, when Bojan acknowledges it like he did in his interview on Wednesday, but still, that was something else that we saw on Monday.
When a game goes down to the wire, there's not usually that much time to prepare for what I would say to start a post-game show, but in that game, I needed every bit of the 2 minutes in the commercial break from when the game ended to the post-game show starting to deciding exactly what I was going to say, and it was one of those times where you just I think Mark Monteith's article on Pacers.com, the headline said, "Tough, tough loss." And I think that was actually a quote from Victor Oladipo when he talked to you after the game. And there's really no other way to put it. It's been a season full of just entertaining games at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. And, you know, what you referenced about the storylines and the atmosphere, I think I saw a quote from Kyrie Irving. And this is a guy that has played in how many big games already in his NBA career and has already been a part of, you know, no doubt this season, some pretty good environments, because when Boston now goes to play places, you know, teams probably get up for the Celtics. They went on that long win streak. And I think he said that that was a really fun game to be a part of. And I guess I'll feel the same way. I hate to bring this back up again. And I think people were maybe thinking about the personnel the Pacers had. And, you know, when people were thinking about this season and this not being being an entertaining team to watch, let's just move past that. But let's just think about big games at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. We are partial. We're not impartial. We are partial because we see 41 games a year at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, but I also see every other arena. And I don't know what it is, but a big game at Bankers Life Fieldhouse just, it makes it seem like an even bigger game. And it's a little bit cliche to say it feels like a playoff atmosphere, but that game was just intense. And it's been a season full of those kind of atmospheres. So it was a fun game and it was a good one to be a part of. And I think I saw Mark Monteith also tweet at one point last night, I'm unable to find it right now, but he said, you never know what'll end up happening, but that game against the Celtics could end up to be one of those turning point kinds of games, because if they would have been able to come from behind and close the victory, would it have been that much different than some of those other come from behind wins? And would they have ultimately just always thought at home, they can fall behind, they can come back, they can fall behind, they can come back? It almost helps a team to have a game go differently, to experience something that you have not experienced. And while the Knicks game, it was a heartbreaking kind of loss and one that you felt like you should have won, that would have been the biggest win of the season. And there were more eyes on the game because of NBA TV. And it was just one of those games you just felt like that team, because of the way they came back, they deserved to win, and then they didn't. And they rallied together. They maybe built some additional chemistry in the last couple of days. And I think they'll always remember that game. You don't always remember a game in December or November when it's March and April. But I'm guessing when the going gets tough in a push towards a playoff seed or even maybe in a potential playoff series, they'll remember that game. And that can be a learning lesson. And it might be a turning point kind of game for a team that already feels like they have had a couple.
And it's interesting to me to hear you make those comments about Bankers Life Fieldhouse and about the late game environment, because as somebody who, you know, is fortunate to be on the floor during those games, I mean, sometimes I almost wonder if the experience you can totally tell in the crowd if you're a little bit higher up, because it is so loud down there. And with everybody yelling and screaming downward and it's all focused on a small area, you know, this isn't a football field, this is a basketball court. Everything is so much more compact and it is so loud and the environment is so good. Even when, you know, the attendance hasn't been a total full house, the environment in there has felt so good. And sometimes I've wondered, you know, is this like this in big games on the road? And of course, there are definitely arenas where absolutely they bring it. But I think the Pacers fans deserve a tip of the cap, because we have had a lot of close games this year. The Pacers are 10-7 at home, but a lot of close games in where the Pacers have been on the better side of things. more often than not. And I think the crowd in attendance, and I'm looking at our Pacers.com/tickets page for the next couple of games, the Nets game and the Mavericks game are selling really, really well. And those are going to be full houses once we get to those games. So I'm looking forward. You know, hopefully the Pacers won't have to dig themselves into a 15-point hole and try to rescue themselves out of it. But regardless,
if they do, they know they can.
Yes, yes. And with Brooklyn and with Dallas in, an opportunity, obviously, for the Pacers to get a couple wins there. Before we start looking forward, though, let's take a look at our pick three, which this will be our Christmas edition of the podcast. So we will come to you next at some point. Not totally sure. This time of the year is always a little bit crazy, and finding openings and everybody's schedule with the Pacers are so busy in between Christmas and New Year's anyway. And of course, there's a lot else going on in that time as well. So we wanted to look at our for our pick three at our three favorite games that are going to be on Christmas Day. And there are five. And this has turned into one of my favorite things to do on Christmas is, you know, basketball starts at 12 and it ends past 12 a.m. And there are five games, some interesting matchups. So I will let you start here. Pick three. You've got a little bit of an addendum why you have to pick the one you are picking, but I'm curious of your choice here on your pick three for Christmas Day games.
It is one of the things that I think fans always look forward to. They usually release the Christmas Day schedule before the regular schedule, so you find out which teams will play on Christmas. And it's been quite some time since the Pacers have been featured. I think I was at the last Pacers Christmas Day game, and I believe it was in 2004, and it was my first month of covering the Pacers with the Indianapolis Fox affiliate. Came over from Terre Haute, and it was a game, I believe, against the Pistons. I might need to do a double check, but it was a tumultuous season without going into the details. But that, I think, was the last season the Pacers were featured on Christmas. Maybe in the future they will be, but of this five-game set, the one game I'm probably not looking forward to, and it's a good thing because I'll be very busy at that point, Sixers-Knicks. I'll pass on that one. I'm over the 76ers just a little bit at this point. It's after the day-long marathon of coverage on ESPN last week, and as much as I do like Joel Embiid, I'm kind of over him just a little bit, and the Knicks are always on Christmas. The one I'm looking forward to is the one that I'll probably be watching the most of, and that would be Timberwolves-Lakers. And I don't think this is the best game of the day, but it is the game that I'll probably be watching the most of because I've got three different stops to make on Christmas Day, and then the team will fly to Detroit on Christmas night. So I'll probably get into my hotel room in downtown Detroit at some point towards the second half of the Rockets-Thunder game, and I'll probably be ready to go to watch Timberwolves-Lakers. The question is, will I be able to stay awake until the end of it? I have a little bit of Lakers overkill as well because it seems like they are on TV every single night, and I'm kind of tired of a couple of players specifically on that team. But I do think the Timberwolves are still interesting. I do wonder whether they're going to gel, and they have a pretty good record, but every time you see them lose, it seems like the sky is falling. And they're for a team that has not been in the playoffs for so many years, that seems like they're a lock at this point and they're going to fight for home court advantage. Everyone seems to be upset. So I'm looking forward to watching that game because it'll be the game that I'll probably watch the most of.
Yeah, the Timberwolves are interesting because it does feel like they haven't yet gelled, but they are 19-13. And I think that's a fair guess for where they would have been at this point with all their offseason turnover. My pick is going to be the game right before it at 8 o'clock. The Rockets visit the Thunder. Of course, there's intrigue there with what the Thunder are, who are now 16-15. They've finally gotten themselves back over 500. It's you know, I don't know if funny's the right word, interesting. You read a lot of those articles out in Oklahoma City, and it's you hear some pretty eerily similar quotes from last year from Paul George about how they haven't glued together yet and how they hope, you know, this most recent big win is going to be the one that jettisons them forward, and maybe it will. When this game comes around, they'll obviously have played again, so they might be back to 500. But the Rockets are, despite the fact that they had a fairly stunning loss at home to the Lakers on Wednesday night, the Rockets play a lot like the Warriors. Their defense has come together and is much, much better, which I think is going to make them a contender. They're 25-5, even with that loss. They're very entertaining to watch. And the Thunder, for all their problems, have remained good on the defensive end. So I always like watching these teams like the Rockets or Golden State, who can put up 20 points in 2 minutes if you don't pay attention to them, go against a team like Oklahoma City, who clearly doesn't have the firepower of Houston, but is a good defensive team, is still kind of waiting out to see if they're going to get you know, this all to work together or mesh together, or if it's just not going to happen. So the Thunder, to me, always have intrigue. The Rockets always have intrigue. And on Christmas Day, I'll make that my pick.
And for the joint pick, I think it's a fairly easy one. And I do think that it's interesting. I think there are some tiers in the NBA, and we've discussed this a little bit, and I know it's not an original topic, because I think people around the NBA do break the teams into tiers at times, but it does feel like the top five or maybe six are a little bit ahead of the rest of the league or ahead of the middle. And I say top five in saying Celtics, Raptors, Cavs, Rockets, Warriors. Spurs is kind of a wild card for me because they are still only four games behind the Rockets, and they have not had Kawhi Leonard with the exception of the last week or so. So I think I'll probably put the Spurs in that category. But of the top six, two of those teams don't play on Christmas Day, the Spurs or the Raptors. And so the only game that features two teams within that top tier is the one that everyone kind of is looking forward to. It would be Cavs-Warriors.
Yeah, completely agree. And obviously you've got the defending champion, you've got the championship game against these two teams, which we have seen so often in the past few years. And unfortunately, the Warriors are without Stephen Curry, so they won't have that. But it was a little bit funny. I had to have kind of a half laugh because I get where they are coming from, and I understand what they're saying. But the Warriors TV guys last night early on were discussing how, you know, the Warriors are really shorthanded here, and about how Memphis got up early in that game, and about how Memphis can take advantage of the Warriors' shorthandedness. It's like, oh man. You know, it must be tough to only have Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, you know, and they were missing Steph, and they were missing Livingston, and they were missing Iguodala, which, of course, those are three important players to that team. But I had to laugh at that because, okay, well, you still got three all-stars on your team. But yeah, of course, that'll be interesting to watch. And it was the Cavaliers, if I remember right, last year, the Warriors led almost the entirety of that game, and the Cavaliers came back late and won in fairly dramatic fashion. So that one I think will be interesting to watch, and I know we both kind of have, even though it's a little unfair to pick four of the five here, I know we have a lot of interest in that Wizards-Celtics game too.
Yeah, that's a good little rivalry, and probably the Celtics are one of the top two or three teams, you know, outside obviously of the Pacers, which I'm working all of those games, but if the Celtics are playing, I'm kind of interested in seeing how they play, watching their broadcast and just kind of seeing them in action. So I think it's good to see that matchup and that little mini rivalry that is brewing between the Celtics and Wizards, and I like to see that one as well. Unfortunately, I think without Steph playing, I'm not sure the hype will be the same in Cavs-Warriors, and I don't know if I'll see any of it because I'll be finishing up some family Christmas times and trying to get my bags packed and get to the hotel. So I'll have to rely on you, Pat, for a recap of what happened in that game, because also the schedule's busy for the Pacers after Christmas. It's not really a Christmas break. We're calling it a Christmas holiday because the Pacers get, you know, a day and a half off. But game on the 26th and 7th, and then you fly out the 28th for an away game on the 29th. So it is about as busy of a week as you can have in the 4 days after Christmas. And so most of my focus, I guess, will be on the blue and gold and not the other teams in the association. But it is fun, and it's not the halfway point of the season, but it almost feels like it's the time when casual fans start paying attention more to the NBA. And I think that's a good sign for the Pacers because the crowds are getting better. TV ratings continue to improve. Without getting into all of the specifics, for a game on a Wednesday night against the worst team in the NBA, the ratings last night on Fox Sports Indiana were among the best of the season. So I think what we have seen from fans just out in the public and on social media telling us how much they enjoy watching the games and how much they appreciate this team, and even after a disappointing loss, to have a good rating number like that against the Hawks is a really good sign. And I think it's a good time to be a Pacer fan.
It's a fantastic sign. And I think we always see a bump in attendance and fans coming in around the Christmas and the holiday time, but you know, this is not ticket speak or anything like that to try to get people in the building. You go right now on our tickets page for the Nets game and the Dallas game, which Nets is 23rd, Dallas is 27th. These games are almost sold out. And I, you know, without knowing a whole lot about tickets, just the trend of where the games have gone, I would expect those to be packed houses the next two games. So if you're not, I haven't even looked at the Minnesota game. I've just looked two ahead. But if you are considering this, I think, you know, what you've seen when we've wondered, you know, this team has been fun to watch. When are they going to get this boost in attendance? I think a lot of people maybe have said, you know, okay, we're interested. This is showing in the TV numbers. We are interested more. More people are interested right now. And they're going to show it, you know, with their pockets when they've got some family in town and the chance to go to games over the holiday time. And that's certainly the case coming up. But you look at this schedule, Jeremiah, and the Pacers have already recently played Brooklyn and Atlanta, and they're 2-0 in those two games. We talked about it on Pacers Weekly before that Brooklyn game, when there were, let's see, 8 games left. And I kind of said, you know, 6-2 I think is realistic and would be a really good 8-game stretch for them. And they're 2-1 on that so far. So I guess they have to go 4-1 to get there. But you had Brooklyn already a win, Atlanta a win, Brooklyn again at home. At Detroit will be tough, but then versus Dallas. I don't even know what to think of at Chicago. Chicago's won 7 in a row as of taping this, but you've got a team that at least in the standings is near the bottom. 5 games left in 2017. 3 of them are against teams near the bottom of the NBA. 2 of those 3 games are at home. And a real opportunity to end December, to end 2017 on a strong note. And the Pacers are 4 games over right now. You'd love to see them, I think, get to 6 or even maybe 7 over with this next stretch of 5 games.
And I see no reason why they can't, because there is only one, there, you know, there is one back-to-back. But then even if you move and look ahead into January, you've got no back-to-backs the first couple of weeks. You've got a home-friendly slate in January as well. So the Pacers have not had that West Coast road trip just yet. They'll have one in the middle of January and one at the end of March. But I said I was looking forward to seeing where this team was when the calendar turns to 2017. I'm also looking forward to seeing where it is when we hop on the plane January 13th for that 5-game Western Conference road trip. That's Phoenix, Utah, Portland, Lakers, Spurs. We're way far ahead of ourselves, but I think you got to continue to take advantage of the opportunities that you have, and 4-2 on that 6-game homestand now, and what you said was an 8-game stretch. After that, to go 6-2 would be great. They aren't there yet, but I do think the opportunity exists, and I'm fairly confident without, you know, every game is scary, and I think you can always look to reasons why you'd have a reason to be worried about a game. But when you think about that Brooklyn game, I just think that the approach this team has, the mindset, the way they would want to go into Christmas with the potential big crowd and what success they've had against the Nets. And it does feel like Brooklyn is faltering just a little bit, especially maybe since that trade. I mean, Okafor didn't even play against the Pacers at the Barclays Center, and Stauskas is a good shooter off the bench, but maybe they disrupted a little bit of their chemistry when making that deal. So I just think that it's a good opportunity, and if you're 19-14, I think you're going to celebrate Christmas a little bit more over the next couple of days.
Yeah, I would agree. So Brooklyn is the next game. That's at home. It's on Saturday. It's at the Fieldhouse. Pacers.com/tickets is how you can be here if you can't. Jeremiah begins on Fox Sports Indiana at 6:30. We begin on the radio side at 6:30 as well. This podcast is not over. Do not turn us off just yet. One thing we wanted to do going into this season of podcasts was to, you and I, Jeremiah, you know we love to talk, and we could probably talk for way longer than the audience would like to listen. But we wanted to bring in some other guests, some people that you might find interesting throughout the season, be it a player, a coach. In this case, it's a fan, and it's a fan that you may have read about or heard about that was here. And so to end this podcast, we are going to go back to an interview that we did just before that Boston game back on Monday with a super fan, but a super fan with a little bit of an international flavor.
That's right, Pat. Special guest now joining us at the conclusion of his 7-game Pacers experience, and it is the experience of a lifetime. Aaron Eamer joins us. He's turned into a little bit of a celebrity over the last couple of weeks, and I would say over the last couple of seasons, because of his unique story in supporting the Pacers and making a once-a-season trip to Indianapolis. So, Aaron, thanks for joining us. And I guess the first question, when the schedule came out, how did you select this time in December to visit with the Pacers, and how's it gone so far?
It was too easy a choice to pick to come now because of just how many home games there are over this short amount of time. I mean, I don't book my my vacation time back home until I see the NBA schedule in August. So when seeing that there were seven home games over the course of about 2 weeks, it made it easy to just say that's the time to go and come over to Indianapolis to come and see the games. And it seems that I've come over at a time when there's some really good basketball to watch.
Absolutely. Now, some know your story, but just to kind of quickly say that again in case you do not, Aaron Emer became a Pacers fan on a family vacation trip to Las Vegas, and you can remember watching a game and just saying, whoever wins this game, I will be a fan of that team.
That's right. So it was in 2004, so I was about 16 years old at the time, and the game was the Pacers against the Nets. And there just wasn't anything to do for a 16-year-old on the nighttime in Las Vegas. So we flicked through the TV channels, put on a basketball game, and just realized there wasn't anyone I was supporting. But I stuck with them, and I'm really, really glad I have done. So it's, and especially now that after all the people I've met on the last couple of trips here.
So what is this, your first trip over here? How often have you gotten to catch the Pacers, and how difficult is it to watch? The NBA, its brand is, it's growing globally, but it can't be the easiest thing, if for nothing else than the fact that you're 5-6 hours ahead.
So I came over last year for the first time, and so back again now. But the way it all sort of happened, I think... So last season, before the full schedule was announced for last year, the London game was announced first. So the London game was announced before the whole NBA schedule was. So first of all, I knew I would finally get to see the Pacers, thinking that was just going to be in London. And then the NBA schedule came out about a month or so later, and there was 8 games in the space of 2.5 weeks at home. And I just saw that schedule and thought that's too good of an opportunity to not finally come over and watch them. This year it's happened again that there's just a lot of home games over one short period, so I've just made the exact same trip once again.
That said, this homestand started a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you've been here for at least 2 weeks, right? So what if they aren't always playing basketball while you are here? What have you filled the time with? And you're here by yourself, correct? This is a pretty adventurous trip for anyone.
Yep. So I arrived on December 2nd. I head home tomorrow on the 19th, the day after the Boston game tonight. So we've got sort of 17 days there, although two of them are short for the arrival and departure. I've been just walking around town a lot, visiting different restaurants and seeing things that are around the town. There's some people I've met whilst I've been here, so I've been able to spend some time with some of those people, going out in the evenings. So I mean, I've been able to find things to do. Indianapolis isn't known as a town with a lot for people to do. It's more of a convention city, but I've been able to fill out my time, and I'm not regretting coming over at any point.
Aaron's downplaying this just a little bit, and I think he's kind of becoming a media veteran right now because he's been interviewed by Eddie White. He was featured in the Indianapolis Star, and now we're talking with him on the Sideline Guys podcast. But he said, I met some people last week. You met Adam Silver.
Yeah, so, So the day before the announcement of the All-Star game coming to Indy, I had an interview with Eddie for his segment, the Around the House segment, and Eddie said to come back the next day and there may be opportunity to meet Adam Silver because Adam Silver was here for the OKC game. So I came over and the All-Star game was being announced. So that broke early in the morning. I turned up, arrived for that, sat and watched the All-Star announcement with Adam Silver, and then Eddie introduced me to the commissioner. Following that, it picked up from there, and Adam Silver then asked me if I was attending the London game in January, and when I said that the tickets were very difficult to get hold of, he's invited me to go along to that as well. So things really sort of stepped up sort of the middle of last week as well.
And then Herb Simon said he wanted to meet you as well because he was standing nearby.
So I, after Adam Silver had walked off and gone back upstairs to wherever he was going before the game, I hung around and to try and speak to Herb Simon, and he noticed I was waiting to speak to him, and I introduced myself and said why I was here, and him and his daughters were then very very generous enough to offer me future tickets to Pacers games, as well as offering me the chance to attend the All-Star game in 2021.
You understand, Aaron, that you are experiencing things here in like 2 weeks that Pacers fans who grew up in Indiana and, you know, will be Pacers fans for like 80 years will never experience.
Yeah, I hope everyone doesn't hate me too much.
I've had someone on Yu Sakagami who come from Japan, and I'm sure you interact with maybe at times on Twitter or are aware of. He sent me a message, and he said that he's sending another fan from Japan over, and he'd like to know from Aaron how he can be able to come to so many games and what cool job you have that allows this.
I work in sort of the back offices in the background of a bank. I mean, in the UK, we get a reasonable amount of vacation time, and I just don't really use much of it until August hits and that NBA schedule comes out. When the NBA schedule comes out, then I look to book everything for the remaining few months of the year. So I just use it all in that one go, and that's what allows me to be able to take a huge amount of time here.
In 2021, then you'll use a little vacation, it looks like, in February.
Well, in 2020, in 21, it looks like we may come in the October, November time and February time. We'll see what happens. I haven't thought that far ahead yet. It was sort of caught me off guard when the Simons offered to
as it might,
as it should.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting any sort of offers at all, but it came. That offer came in, and so I'm having to reconsider what I will do in 3 years' time.
Hearing your story is so interesting. I've got a buddy who went to the University of Worcester, so outside of a few hours outside of London, and I was over there when I was a student at Ball State here when the Olympics were in London, and it was part of a student exchange group that I met up with him, and he's a gigantic basketball fan. It was before I even started working here, and he always wanted to come over and watch games in person, but obviously had never had that chance, and he came a couple of years ago for a similar slate of about 5 home games, and just the opportunity to finally watch the game in person, I think, really is what struck me. And he got to come to a practice, and at that practice, Larry Bird walked by, and, you know, sometimes we take that for granted here, just, you know, the access we get to such important people around basketball. But I want to go back to where you're from and England and the UK as a whole, basketball. I mean, it's obviously not at the level it is here, but do you find it as a sport that is growing and one that is increasing in popularity?
It is growing, yeah. So, I mean, I'm a statistician for the pro team in Bristol, the Bristol Flyers, who are part of the British Basketball League. So I'll see the sort of crowds that they get at the moment and see things firsthand very, very regularly. But the crowds there are probably between sort of 500 to 1,500 people regularly. In Bristol, they regularly sell out at about 800, but in the next, I think in 2 years' time, they're looking to open a new basketball facility, which is 3 courts in size with bleacher seats that will come out, and it'll be about a 3,000-seat small 3,000-seat arena. They're approaching the kids and trying to gain interest of the kids in the local area, so that so that we can get them playing as well as watching as well. And if they grow up watching the game, then they will obviously try and introduce their own friends. And as long as the game keeps picking up in 20 years' time, their own kids and stuff like that. So it is growing. When it comes to sort of finals and playoffs and things like that, there's more crowds then. And then there's a little bit more TV coverage. In the last couple of years, there's been coverage on sort of interactive BBC channels as well, but it's slow because obviously the country is really, really stuck on soccer.
Oh yeah, that sport.
but that's why
the British Basketball League aren't trying to approach and try and win over the 20 to 40 year old male crowd who have been fans of that for their entire lives.
So let's say you go into work and you say, hey, you start talking about basketball, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry. I mean, maybe LeBron James is an internationally known name, but I mean, could you walk into the office and say, hey, you know, I was at a Pacers game, and would there be any knowledge of what you're talking about? Can you talk NBA basketball with friends, coworkers?
There's about four people in my job that I can speak to. And that's just in my individual department, and my department's probably got about 200 odd people in it. So a couple of percent of the office, I can potentially have a slight basketball conversation with. There's a couple that are really into it but don't watch games, but they'll follow the scores and watch highlights on Instagram and things like that. So there's people I can catch up with, but there really isn't many. Up until last year, when I came here, I'd never met a Pacers fan in person, so so that was interesting.
We fans that are listening to this podcast hear what Pat and I have to say about this team on a weekly basis, and actually maybe three or four times a week during the radio or television broadcasts. I'm curious your perspective, because you watch every game, so you are a knowledgeable fan, not just a fan with a little bit of interest. What is your thought of this team? Do you remember when you heard the trade was going to happen in late June, what you thought then and what you've seen right now?
So when that trade was announced and it came through, we'd heard a lot of rumors of other trades that would be possible and how much other teams, particularly some that we know the names of, were trying to get out of the Pacers to take Paul George away. But I think although most people thought that the team were robbed in Paul George for the couple of players that we did get in Oladipo and Sabonis, I thought it was probably the best deal that was available from what I had seen. I'd obviously not seen as much as you guys have, and as much as the office will know, obviously. But I thought it was the best deal available for in regards to Sabonis. We have a player who's, 21 years old at the time and has started 66 games for a team that made the playoffs, and still 21 years old. And for Oladipo, a player that's been in the league 4 years, still only 25 years old, and has had a year to learn a lot from the MVP of the league. So it's two players who are still both 25 years and under, who have had a year in a good playoffs team, working with the MVP in the league. And I mean, if you don't learn in that sort of environment and be able to take it to the Pacers where it's an entirely new team and you can put your stamp on it yourself, then you're doing something wrong. And it seemed it's particularly with Victor, that coming back to Indiana, a place that he already knows to some degree, that he's really wanted to put his stamp on that and do that in the city. So I was disappointed that Paul George wanted to leave, especially, I mean, about 2 weeks before the trade was made, he said he wanted to win a title here and sort of become, and I think,
become a guy that could get a tattoo on your arm.
Potentially. But I mean, he said he wanted to win a title here at one point and wanted to sort of surpass Reggie and things like that. And I mean, it seems that in the last couple of years, those sort of words don't mean so much, as we found out a year earlier with Kevin Durant to Golden State. So things change. But it looks like we've got two players who really want to be here right now. And glad that they do, because they're players that really look like they've added something to the side and made this team a really fun team to watch.
Let's close here talking about tattoos. This is my first time seeing them. I know if you have read the Indy Star article, there are pictures there. So remember, this is an audio podcast here, so we don't have visuals, so we got to be a little bit more descriptive. But on the inside of your right arm, on your forearm, there is Reggie Miller with the patented choke sign. You've got the Reggie autograph and number 31 down by your wrist, and then the Reggie Miller banner in the background. You can kind of see the hoop coming over Reggie's right shoulder. This is interesting to me because you became a Pacers fan at the very end of his run, so it was almost going back in time for you to realize exactly what he was and what his heyday was, and enough to get you to have him permanently in pretty large. This goes from your elbow down to your wrist on in your forearm.
And Mel tattooed. Daniels is starting on the other forearm.
So the other forearm, let's take a look at this. We've got, okay, Mel Daniels on the outside of your arm. So you've got a couple of Pacers tattoos on your arm, but the Reggie one, well, I guess both of these really interest me because these are both guys who are after your time. This isn't Paul George or anything. This is you kind of going back in time and realizing the greatness of these two.
So, I mean, there's only, I've wanted for a long time to try and, because the Pacers and basketball is sort of the main passion I have. I wanted to get something that covered that, and I mean, I've only followed the team for, I mean, it's about 13 or 14 years now. I wanted to cover some more history of the side as well. I've looked back and watched a lot of Reggie's history and some of the documentaries that are out there about Reggie and things like that. Managed to catch the end of the 13-14 season, and then all of the 14-15 season, which was a bit of a mess. But with regards to that, I think whenever anybody thinks about the Pacers, they think about Reggie, and it would have been weird to get a Pacers tattoo and there be no Reggie Miller on there at all. Ultimately, it's going to fill the entire arms. There's a lot of space to fill, and without Reggie Miller on there, it wouldn't seem right at all, really.
So you can go up to the players and be like, "Hey, Vic, I've got some arm space. You know, if you hang around, you do enough, I've got a whole bicep."
I mean, I'm anticipating this being completed by the next time I'm here.
Okay.
So by this time next year, we should have the whole arm done. But depending on how the Pacers do, we may have to go somewhere else. And
I'm just saying, you've got another arm with some space. The sideline guys could get a spot.
Got another arm, some legs.
I think Eddie White maybe deserves one first, because is he kind of the person who's gotten you, made some of this happen? If you never met Eddie the first time, would you be talking to us today?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I met you briefly last year, and I think that was...
Okay, I'll take the credit then.
I met you last year. Chris Denary introduced me to you last year, but Eddie's introduced me to sort of Adam Silver and...
Yeah, I can introduce you to Pat. Eddie can introduce you to Adam Silver.
I mean, everyone's introduced me to everyone. There's all this one big circle, but everyone's really tried to and found me being here interesting enough to want to just introduce me to as many people as possible. Eddie's found a bunch of people for me to speak to. To the most part, without me saying, "Hey, can I meet this person?" or whatever, he's gone, "This person would be good for you to speak to, and this person," and it just seems to be another person each time. So the Indy Star called me the other morning. I wasn't expecting that to come at all. I just had a phone call come through, and he said, so the guy calling me just asked if, Eddie said to give you a call and said that you might be expecting it. I said I wasn't expecting it at all, but yeah, carry on, let's talk. And so, I mean, there's just more and more people that I keep getting introduced to, but I'm completely happy with that. I want to try and make the most of the time I'm here and make the most of the experience. So, so it's really good to just keep on meeting as many people as I can, really.
Well, Aaron, it was great to meet you for the first time, and great to have you back, and great to see your support. And it's an awesome story that we're happy to help share here on Pacers Sound on the Sideline Guys podcast. So enjoy your trip back, and we'll look forward to seeing you many times into the future.
You should do, yeah. I should be back hopefully not too long.
And Pat, Aaron's a little under the weather today. He said the only bad part about this trip was an illness that happened the last 2 days. But the good news was he only got sick when the Pacers were not home. So Saturday and Sunday basically has not been out out for the final game of this seven-game journey, Pacers and Celtics. And I think, Pat, this is a good time to wrap up this edition of Sideline Guys Podcast. We thank all of you for listening. We hope you enjoy your holidays. It'll be a short holiday for the Pacers with a game on the 23rd and then a game at Detroit on the 26th. So no extended vacation, but that is such is life in the NBA.
Yeah, and we will try to get to a podcast at some time in there. But as you said, between Christmas and New Year's, we are extremely busy. But to go back to Aaron real quick, the last thing I want to do when I'm sick is talk for like 20 minutes. So we certainly appreciate him coming on. And you know, you kind of brought up at the beginning of the year, let's find ways to diversify this podcast a little bit and find interviews, players, coaches to talk to. So this is a hopefully an example that you guys enjoy in a way that it's not always just got to be you and me talking for 45 minutes. And Aaron kind of helped us with that this week.
Absolutely. So Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, however you're celebrating. Enjoy some family time, and we hope you enjoy some Pacers basketball. Thanks for listening to the Sideline Guys Podcast.